TypeScript, fabulous TypeScript, everyone loves it, talking about TypeScript. TypeScript, well, it makes JavaScript typed, but is it worth all the hype? Let's get into performance, but you know what? We just do you one know, take and roll through it. So
listen, I think the performance perfectly matched my opinions about TypeScript.
Awesome, because Chris has opinions. Welcome to our show. The show is called Tools Day. It is a podcast about tech tools, tips, and tricks every other Tuesday at 2 p.m.
ish. In some time zone. My time zone. Pacific time zone usually, but you know.
Yeah, a little bit of podcast history. Chris and I started the show when we were both living in Austin, Texas, and we used to launch it actually at 2 o'clock, and we liked the alliteration of tools every other Tuesday at 2. And so we kept it, even though time is a fluid bubble that means nothing.
Deep, profound.
Wait, we've missed the... And today we're talking about...
Oh, yeah.
TypeScript.
Oh, no. Okay.
We're keeping it. So before we get into our show, I'm excited to dive into this because Chris has actually written a blog post about his feelings on TypeScript and things that he wished that he knew when he was getting started with TypeScript. And I feel like he's speaking to me because I feel like I very rarely interface directly with TypeScript, but I do... I frequently interface with it, but I'm not like interfacing with it in a very meaningful way that I will need like a deep knowledge of it, I guess. So I think the show is for me. I think it's for you too, as our audience. And before we dive into that, I want to thank today's sponsor, who is Honey Badger. Let's face it, your code is going to have errors even when written by amazing developers like yourself. When bad things happen, it's nice to know that Honey Badger has your back. Honey Badger combines error monitoring, uptime monitoring, and cron monitoring into a single easy-to-use platform, all for way less than you're probably paying now. Honey Badger monitors and sends error alerts in real time with all the context needed to see what's causing the error and where it's hiding in your code so you can quickly fix it and get on with your day. Honey Badger also lets you know when your external services are having issues or your background jobs go AWOL or silently fail. It's a self-funded bootstrap venture, which is super cool because it means that the team only answers to you, not a board of investors. Tools Day listeners get 30% off for 6 months. Simply mention Tools Day when signing up and they'll apply the discount to your account. No credit card required. So check out honeybadger.io. That is HoneyBadger.io. Honeybadger.io.
And we spelled it correctly this time.
Sorry, Honey Badger. I thought that I spelled it. I confidently spelled it wrong in our last show.
Well, here we are, I guess.
Here we are. But we kind of were talking about how Badger was hard to spell immediately afterwards, so it kind of like balanced out.
We were aware inside our heads.
Yeah, I think that you unintentionally caught that. I missed the E, and then you're like, what?
Maybe.
Anyway, TypeScript. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so I think we've talked about TypeScript once or twice in a show prior. We must have, because it's been on my mind.
Yeah, back when I was using it more frequently, and I had more opinions on it.
For a second, I thought you were actually. Did you ever? No. Is this sarcasm? Is this real?
No, I used TypeScript in my last job. A year and a half ago.
I did not realize this. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
We were doing a migration to TypeScript, and then it became a big part of our code base, and I had to get used to it. And I haven't really used it much since. I recently built a tool that used TypeScript, but I wasn't the one who was writing that type system.
Okay. Yeah. So
you were like, wait, are you joking?
I couldn't. I didn't know. Cause I remember we talked about it a while ago, and then I just couldn't remember the history anymore. But Netflix Studios has made, we have this thing called Paved Path at Netflix Studios, which is basically a piece of technology we think that everyone should use. And if you don't use them, you should give us a good reason why you're not using them. But we have paved path libraries, and I write one of them. And last year we made a big announcement saying, hey, all our paved path libraries will be in TypeScript now. And I was like, oh no, I don't know TypeScript. And so for the last year, I've been kind of like smashing my head against the desk and like, you know, can I somehow impound TypeScript into my head? You know, I've never done any types at all before. And so I didn't know anything. And so it's been a long process. And so that's kind of why I wanted to write the blog post. It's like, hey, you know, here's some things that were just really tough for me for the first year.
Yeah, so Chris has outlined 7 lessons, or 7 items. And I'd love to go through them because I think that they're valuable. So
yeah, if you wanna I figured we'll dry run them on the podcast and then I'll just like take
this,
any notes.
This blog post that he's writing, by the way, is like 4 paragraphs done and then it's an outline. So this is the audio blog post. We're writing it now.
Yeah. Okay, so my first 2 points are kind of similar, but it's around this whole concept where, you know, if you're kind of plugged into the dev community, you're on JavaScript Twitter, you'll see a whole bunch of TypeScript is the best thing since everything. It saves the web. JavaScript sucked before and now it's great and everyone loves it. And if you're like me and you don't know anything about TypeScript, it really kicks in this imposter syndrome when you're trying to learn TypeScript and you don't know what's going on. And
I also want to add to this point, I feel like TypeScript is not the tool for every job.
Yes.
I mean, you know, a big reason why people like it is because it makes JavaScript a lot more structured, which is really great when you're building libraries that other people are using, which is probably a big reason why for your use case, this makes a lot of sense. But if you're not using TypeScript, do not panic. It is okay.
I kind of view TypeScript as a way of documentation and communication, right? It's telling the next person, how do I use your function without them having to read a set of docs, right? And that can be super useful, you know, but it's not required. There are other ways of doing this. And part of the joy of JavaScript sometimes that you can do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And that's nice too, you know? I was telling a friend recently that when I write a component now for my library, 10% of my time is writing the UI component and 90% of the time is writing the type for it. And so like, that's a lot of commitment. It's 10 times the amount of work basically to do a component TypeScript for me. This might be not the same for everybody, but like not everyone has that like level of like time.
Yeah, you know, I actually take back that I said that I don't work with TypeScript that much. That was a bold-faced lie because literally in the last project that I worked on, which was Tooling Report, that we just launched, like my team just launched, same exact experience where I felt like with JavaScript, I wouldn't get stuck as much as I would with TypeScript. Yeah. And in one of the cases, it was a bug in TypeScript. And that was really frustrating because me as a TypeScript like novice, I would say, didn't know that this bug wasn't my fault. And I spent like a whole day trying to debug it until I just asked my coworker who had way more TypeScript experience. They're like, oh, that shouldn't be that way. And I was like, oh. So I feel like if I was to give advice, which this isn't my blog post, but my advice is like, don't be afraid to ask questions because there's a lot of questions to ask. And once you figure it out how to do it, it's a lot easier to do it the second time.
I can say, you know, 2 points to that. One, totally agree. Ask questions as much as you can. I was lucky at Netflix that we have a TypeScript channel. And so I would be like, I'd write these like 3-paragraph posts saying, hey, everybody, Chris here again, and I'm confused. But I think sometimes the hard part of asking for help about TypeScript, especially if you're like me who didn't know anything about types, that you don't know the word to use to describe the problem. You're like, what? How do I even Google this? It's like I'm just typing random strings into Google and hoping for the best.
And I think the other part of that is it seems very basic because TypeScript is elemental in the sense that you are describing primitives in JavaScript. You're defining primitives for your application in a way. And you would think that you're supposed to just know these things.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know what you're supposed to know and what.
Yeah. Right. You don't know what you don't know. Right. And so like it's one of those things where it's just different enough language wise that your prior knowledge of JavaScript does not give you the words to help you out in TypeScript. And so you're like, oh, I'm just stuck. And so that was one of the hardest parts for me with TypeScript, is that I just didn't know how to Google for questions, which is like, I've always been able to rely on my Googling ability to figure out, I'll find some Stack Overflow thing, I'll find some blog post, I'll search on Reddit. But with TypeScript, I couldn't Google it as easily. It would take me a lot longer to find what I needed to find. And that was just so hard for me.
I totally agree with you. And I also feel like sometimes the solution wasn't as simple as finding like a line of code to use, because right. it's a system that you're building. So yeah. the solution is more of like connecting the dots between right. various like parts of your app that you're writing. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The next point on this topic for me was that, you know, when I was reading the docs, I would see a lot of app code examples, but I was writing a library, and a library is significantly different in how you both write and use it than how you how to write an application. You know, when you write a component library, for example, or design system, the way you write that component is different than how you would write it inside your own application. It's more generic. It has to be more flexible. It has to do a bunch of more things. And in the same way with TypeScript, the syntax is much more complicated. You have to know about all these power functions in TypeScript that you may not ever run across with app code. And then if you're just reading these blog posts about, hey, you know, I wrote my app in TypeScript and I used, you know, the at types library, which is the, you know, NPM package which has all the, you know, the types for libraries, you don't ever have to do this. And so, it's even harder to Google for things. You know, maybe this I should summarize these two points into, it can be hard to Google for TypeScript stuff, and that's okay.
Something that I ran into frequently was mixing up what should be capitalized and what shouldn't
be. Oh, God.
When you're defining the types.
Yeah.
And I don't even, like, I wouldn't know to Google that. Like, I didn't even know why when I was specifying, I don't even remember what the type was. Like,
yeah.
Say it was number, like the capital
yes.
or the lowercase.
Sometimes, and it doubly sucks if you're in the middle of a GraphQL migration as well, which has a different capitalization for number than TypeScript. And so you're like, I'm writing my GraphQL code next to my TypeScript code. Up here, it's number with a capital N, and down here, it's number with a lower N. But sometimes it's uppercase object, and who knows why.
And you can also cast it as anything. So yeah. it was like this variable as this type within
right.
your code. And you're not supposed to do that, but sometimes you gotta make it work.
This comes back to kind of the vocabulary problem I had. Like the words like cast or type guard or, you know, all these things like you just, I just didn't know what that word, I mean, cast I kind of knew, but I didn't really use. Type guard I never seen before, and it's just like when you read through the official docs,
yeah.
they don't tell you this. They just kind of assume some knowledge.
It's so frustrating that like in JavaScript, which is a loosely typed language, you all of a sudden have to cast a number to a number type. Like it's just like I'm used to in JavaScript, it just being a number. It's obviously
yeah.
a number. But now yeah. with TypeScript, you have to make sure that everything matches like the syntax of how you're defining it
right.
so that the outcomes are expected. And it's yeah. really good for that in that sense because it does all this error checking for you.
Yeah. I'll say like one of the things is that it kind of exposes you to a lower level JavaScript that you generally don't have to think about, right? If you use a number, it's just a number in JavaScript. You don't have to think about the syntax or about the N or primitives in the case of primitives. But like, once you're typing them, you have to know the language, the words for the language.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an exciting adventure that I still spend a good chunk of time every day when I'm typing something where I have to like, oh, what does this actually mean? And it's been a year, and so. Yeah, it's just a kind of a never-ending journey with TypeScript sometimes. That kind of dovetails into my third point, which is like, you know, I tried reading the official docs when I was first starting the TypeScript, and they just updated this. So like this point lost a lot of its oomph yesterday, which really sucks.
Wow,
it's great. It's great, but it sucks for my blog post because I had to remove a bunch of like my gripes, but it's fine. Anyways, the old doc site had everything by the version number. So if I was looking for a specific type of, you know, detail of something, it was like nested under the version number where it was released. So you couldn't just like look for, oh, what is a generic in a table of contents? It would be nested like 5 layers deep somewhere. And I was just like, why would you do this to anybody? But what happened was that I found a bunch of great resources that are made by the community. And you know, all of them were really aimed at people like me or you who were like just newer to TypeScript. And so the two big ones are the Bassarat Gitbook, which is a person who went through a bunch of Stack Overflow and various communities and just kind of collected all kind of the top questions he saw or she saw. Actually, I don't know who or they saw. I'll use they. And then the next one is the React TypeScript cheat sheet by Sean Wong. Oh my God. I always forget his last name, and then he gives me so much grief on this because he does listen to this podcast, and then every so often he's like, hey, Chris, looks like you. Sean Wang. All right.
Swix. I feel Swix. Like I just always recognize his icon and username everywhere.
I know him by Swix, not by his last name. He came up with this great, amazing cheat sheet for TypeScript and React. And if you write React and TypeScript, you owe it to yourself to check out this link because it saved me so much time, like an innumerable amount of hours. So definitely look at that first thing first.
This is cool.
The rest of my blog point posts are now bulleted points. Now we'll be workshopping these from here on out. My last one here was about utility types. They're like helper functions in TypeScript. And I made a comparison to Sass because in Sass, and when I first started using Sass, I kind of used it as CSS. And then I was like, hey, here's these color functions, and here's a map, and here's a nested media queries, and all this kind of fun stuff. And then you realize, oh, it's so nice to have all these things that compute things for me, as opposed to just doing it by hand. And that's what utility types were for me. It took me some time to get around to them because I was just like, I just didn't want to add it to my like already full brain of TypeScript. And then when I finally got around to it, I was like, oh, this just makes my code a billion times better. I was so happy I found them. So
yeah, so do you want to give an example of these? Because I definitely don't take advantage of these.
Yeah, sure. So the ones I called out were pick, omit, and required. And what they are is that you can take a different type and then modify it into a new type. So pick says, give me your base type and give me the properties you want out of it, and I'll create for you a new type. Omit is the reverse, saying omit these types from these properties from a type and create a new type. Required says take a type and make every property required. And there's kind of a bevy of these things that kind of do these kind of small functional things that otherwise you'd have been copy-pasting, you know, hey, you know, I have a component and it has a child component and I've just copied all the properties down to each of them. Whereas you could just use pick and required to kind of chain these together to build a more fluid type system that kind of relies on each other as opposed to a lot of duplicate.
So it's more dynamic.
Yes, exactly. Things flow better.
Nice.
Now, if you've ever used like a CSS variable and had to change it, or, you know, change the color later on, CSS variables let you do it in one place versus, you know, in every place.
They flow. Yes.
They flow, right? Same idea with the helper function.
I think that's a good analogy. It's like the difference between a static variable, like what Sass would compile to, versus a dynamic variable. I guess when you use these helper methods, you have, when you change something, they will be true for everything within that change.
So I compared it to Sass because they are runtime static. They're not dynamic like the way CSS variables are on the fly. If you want dynamic stuff, you mix that with generics. And that was my last point on this blog post thing about generics.
We'll talk about it now. You might have to rearrange the blog post.
Yeah, oh God. So generics are variables, more or less. You know, you basically say, hey, user, I'm not going to define this thing for you. Tell me how to define that, and I will use it in my type. And so you would say, you know, let's say I have a property called dog, right? I have a property called breeds.
Cat.
Okay, a property on dog called breeds, right? And This is a terrible example. I am like blanking on my. Okay, here we go.
Like,
here,
let's use a profile, a name, email.
Yes. my mind. Literally anything where you don't know the type of it at compile time, but the developer does, right? So the developer says, "I'm going to use your component and tell you that this property means something else," and so you get the whole thing typing. It flows through the system, but it's generic enough that you can use it in variety of places. I think a classic example is actually more like a drop down, right? If you have a drop down component. And you give it a list of items, right? And all I know is that I, the component, know that you're giving me a list of items. And then you, the user, tell me what each item is typed as so that when I let you render it out, that part is still typed all the way down. Even though I, in the component, didn't know what an item was, you did. And so you can help me out by giving me the type. Help me help you.
So why wouldn't you know the types of the elements, like the items within the dropdown?
Yeah, so this is one of those things that is only in library code, basically. So let's say I have a dropdown. I have a default renderer, right? So by default, I just put out a string, and I think it's an object. It has a property called label, right? But you're a different, you know, application. You have a list of objects, and the label property is now called something else, or, you know, and so... you can tell me, hey, I need to do a custom render of this item. I'm going to pass in a custom object, and I'm going to handle that myself. And because I've exposed it as a generic, I allow you to tell me what that custom object is, so that when you write a function how to render something.
So is this a little bit like if you had a web component and you had slots, and you can slot in content into the web component?
Yes. Okay.
You could have like generic information. So your example of a dropdown, you could have a dropdown with text, you could have a dropdown with an image and text, you could have a dropdown with like a loading spinner inside of it. Right. As library code, you need the ability to use that dropdown experience with multiple interfaces.
Right. Yep.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And this is kind of why writing library code is more difficult, because you have to say, oh, you know, I have an opinion about how this component should be used, but I know that my end user, a developer somewhere, is like, oh, my designer gave me this different design, and this render is now a gigantic box of something, and can I still please use your component? And I'm like, I guess you can, but I hate you.
This is so fascinating, because literally I'm working on this problem right now. There is a working group within the W3C that I'm a member of, and we are trying to figure out how to make form elements more extensible so that they can become more stylable. And so like a big part of that is how can we genericize this dropdown to be able to have extensible input types or like a pop-up or any of those elements. And these are like interesting architecture problems to solve that you run into a lot. With systems architecture specifically.
Right. Yeah.
So back to your point number five.
Anyways, all that to say, generics are great. Utility functions are great. Don't put them off as long as you can, like I did, because I saw them. I didn't know what the word meant. And I was like, I'm going to yikes out of here. But I wish I had, you know, not done that yikes out of there and spent some time learning it early, because it would have saved me a lot more time down the road. It is... All this to say, it is a big mental load to kind of grapple with all these things. And so maybe it made sense that I learned it later. But if I could do it again, I think I would have saved myself a lot of time and headache by using some of these things.
I think that's a really good tip specifically for if you're working with libraries. Because if you're working with app code, you probably aren't going to run into this problem as much often.
Yeah. I think my last main point I want to cover here is that there's this thing you run into a lot with library code or app code where I'm trying to type something and it just doesn't work. It's too hard. I had a scenario where I spent a week trying to type something, and there was a bunch of different objects that relied on the other object and blah, 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 and it just wasn't working. And I was like, oh, I could do this in JavaScript, no problem, but I can't do it in TypeScript. And it was actually turned into kind of a code smell. What I found out is that it's often a code smell that the design of the API is wrong. Not wrong that it doesn't work, but wrong that it's too complex and will probably break somewhere else. And this has been kind of true. I've seen it a few times where I made an API that was super complex and I couldn't type it. And then because I couldn't type it, I went back to the board and was like, hey, you know, what can I change? And it became much better because I was like, oh, this should be a smaller function here or there. And so if something gets too complicated to type,
if you're trying to type it for a week, then that's what you know.
Yeah, if you're trying to type it for a week, it still doesn't work out. It might not be you. It might be the design of the API. And so don't be afraid to kind of take a step back and say, maybe it's not TypeScript and maybe it's me this time, or me, my code rather.
Yeah. I also want you to talk about this last point you have in here about type guards.
Oh, okay. That's fair. Okay, so I punted this because we passed 20 minutes. But this one is interesting, again, for library code, where, or actually app code too, where a TypeScript, you tell a function, hey, I expect this type, and this type has these properties, and then you write your code based on that type. Now, TypeScript compiles it down to JavaScript. So after the compilation phase, there's nothing actually guarding your code from putting in the wrong types, right? If you have an API response that's wrong and it comes through and it doesn't match your type, it'll just crash your code, right? Because it's missing a property or something. And so type guards exist to say, hey, not only am I going to allow things to go through, I'll type things in the function, I'm also going to put in an if statement here saying if property exists, right? Or something like that, which further narrows your code base down to saying, it's both typed and guaranteed that this thing will exist. It's something you would have done in normal JavaScript, right? If you were responding to an API response, you would probably check, say, hey, I'm gonna, you know, check this property exists before I render it. With TypeScript, you get this false sense of security that, oh, you know, my type is correct, so it will exist. But that's not true in the real world, right? Sometimes APIs are wrong, or something else, a wrong input happened, or something else happened where your system was correct, but the input was wrong. And so type guards guarantee accuracy, or at least will let you fail gracefully, as opposed to letting it, you know, just fail with JavaScript.
Yeah, so this is something you can also watch out for if you are working with GraphQL and you have more input into what that call is and what the response should look like.
Right, exactly, yeah. So if you're using GraphQL, you say, hey, I only want these properties, but my TypeScript thing required like five more properties, and you didn't get past it to me, then it'll fail. So
you gotta stop. That's another reason that TypeScript is so frustrating sometimes to work with, is like it's just so specific, and JavaScript is the opposite of that.
Yes, right. It's free from, it's flowing, it's happy, it's yeah.
But
all this to say,
go ahead.
I was gonna say all this to say that I will continue writing my work code in TypeScript always. Like I fully believe that when you're working on a team, TypeScript will solve a class of problems that you just won't run into, and that by itself is worth it. It also, I think, forces you to think a bit more on the function, like the actual shape of your functions and how your code's structured, because you have to think about the types, and that's just extra work.
The systems architecture.
Yes, exactly. It's systems architecture brought to your app code. But in my own projects, when I'm working by myself, and it's just for me, I will never use TypeScript. It's just too much work.
I agree. I mean, as I have clearly mentioned, I have not been the proponent of TypeScript on any team that I have been on. But I think it's really important to understand in this front-end economy. I think if you are new to code, I wouldn't focus on TypeScript, but I would like try to understand the concepts of types. And I feel like TypeScript is one of those things that everyone puts on their, like, looking for a JavaScript developer with 40 years of experience and 10 years of experience, you know. I think that TypeScript is something that you're going to be seeing on those job boards. So it's not a bad idea if you are looking for a role specifically as, like, a JavaScript engineer to understand TypeScript. Probably not going to be implemented at companies that have older code bases, but it is a very large possibility that there's going to be migrations happening, because that's like the trend now. It's always migrations. Front-end development is migrating from one stack to another. Not even a stack, like one product to another. If it's like Backbone to Angular to React to type script with React, like that's always gonna happen. Yep.
That's life. That's okay. Yeah. It's exciting, right? Kind of.
Yes. So thank you, Chris, for going through that audio blog post with us. I found it very enlightening, and I hope that our audience did too. If you did like it, give us a shout. And also remember that you get a 30% off discount for 6 months when you sign up for Honey Badger. Simply mention Tools Day Podcast when signing up, and they will apply the discount to your account. No credit card required at honeybadger.io. I'm going to spell it right. HoneyBadger.io.
Nailed it.
Any last tips or tricks or words of advice when it comes to TypeScript?
One last one. Forgot about this one. If you are writing a TypeScript library, check out, I'll add this to the show notes, TSDX. It's a library by the folks who made Formic, the React library, React Form library. And it is like the Create React app of TypeScript libraries. It makes life so much easier. So check that out, especially if you're using a Redis library.
That's a really good tip. I am definitely interested in seeing what that looks like, because the Forms React app is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's all we have for today. And I want to thank you all for listening. And again, if you like the show, please share it with a friend, share it with a coworker. Share our other TypeScript shows where I think we talk more about getting started and some more like the details there. We'll have links for all those things in the show notes. And that is all for now. So we will see you next time. Bye, y'all.
Bye.